May it please the court, Nancy Johnson, registration number 2462, appearing for Thomas Owen. This matter comes on for an appeal concerning the Department of Motor Vehicles revocation of his driver's license. First, I'd like to address the applicability of the Administrative Procedures Act in 244105 Colorado Revised Statutes. Subsection 1 specifically states that the act is to ensure due process of law. And it applies where it is unless it is expressly stated in other statutes, it does not apply to all administrative hearings and procedures. Therefore, the act does apply to proceedings under revised statutes 422126, subsection 8 hearings. Now, under 422126, subsection 6, there are requirements for stating that no person engaged in conducting a hearing or participating in a decision or initial decision shall be responsible to or subject to the supervision or direction of any officer, employee, or agent engaged in the performance of investigatory or prosecuting functions for the agency. The parties to a hearing must be able to determine whether the person holding the hearing is so engaged. And without a record being kept of who is performing an initial decision, there's no way a person facing a hearing in the Department of Motor Vehicles could determine whether the hearing officer or person holding the hearing has been so engaged in.
So did you reference this in your brief?
Pardon?
Did you reference this question in your brief?
We referenced it, yes, Your Honor. The issue is we referenced the requirements of 422126 subsection 6 with regard to holding a hearing.
Regard to the qualifications of the hearing officer?
That is part of subsection 6, Your Honor. And without a record, we can't make a determination. Now,
determination of what? I guess I'm not following the argument. Are you saying that the ALJ here, or the hearing officer, whoever it was, had no statutory authority to conduct a hearing?
No, Your Honor, we are not.
So then I'm not following what you're saying.
The part of the statutory authority is that it requires that they are not being engaged in investigatory or prosecutory functions. If they are, then indeed they have no, they cannot hold a hearing. But that is we are addressing that with regard to the initial determination under subsection 6 as to whether or not the documentation, the affidavit, associated documents were sufficient to order a subsection 8 hearing or revocation of a license.
Are you arguing that the hearing officer may have been the one who made that initial determination?
I'm arguing that we don't know who made the initial determination.
So we should, and therefore, what's the harm to your client?
We can't tell whether indeed the person who made the initial determination, if indeed one was made, and we don't know that because there is no record of it, was involved in the investigatory or prosecutory functions.
Did you raise this issue before the hearing officer?
No, Your Honor. Now, our argument is that we must be able to determine that in order to determine whether the person is legally engaged in holding the hearing. And because there is no record, and we did raise the issue of a subsection 6 determination, that was raised. There is a motion filed pursuant to that to dismiss because there is no record of it. That was raised, but specifically raising it other than by written motion, it was not raised with the hearing officer. We did not question the hearing officer as to his qualifications, is what I'm saying. So, yes, the issue was raised, but it was raised by motion. And the hearing officer did not address in the hearing or in his order that particular motion. Upon the, back to my argument, under subsection 8, the hearing officer is allowed to take notice of general technical or scientific facts within its knowledge, but only if the fact is so noticed as specified in the record or is brought to the attention of the party before final decision, and every party is afforded an opportunity to controvert the facts so noticed. In this case, the hearing officer took notice of affidavits which were not provided to the defendant before the hearing. He also took notice of testimony that happened in a case that occurred prior to the hearing in this one, with another attorney and another defendant entirely, of which, again, no notice was given, no written copy of any testimony, et cetera, was given. Due process should mean that the defendant is entitled to have that information prior to the hearing and is entitled to bring in and should be able to bring in witnesses, affidavits, whatever is necessary to controvert those facts.
Did you receive copies of the affidavits at the hearing?
Yes, at the end, Your Honor.
And the hearing officer left the record open for 11 days, is that right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And did you ask for further hearing after you reviewed the affidavits?
No, we did not ask for further hearing. We had the 60-day period was up in 11 days, and there was insufficient time to have a hearing.
So we did not ask. How do we know that?
In part because we did not have sufficient time to get a witness, have them review the record, and have them prepare for a hearing. From our end, there was insufficient time.
How do we know that? How do we know that in the record?
Is there an affidavit in the record?
No, there is no affidavit in the record.
Okay.
My apologies. That is.
You're telling us now.
I'm telling you now, and I apologize. We did not make a record to that extent. That is correct. The problem is that, and especially in, as noticed in the record, from a previous case where Attorney Stacy Woods represented the defendant, the hearing officer said, well, you can order a transcript. That is insufficient notice whatsoever, and yet he took notice of that information that he received in a prior hearing. The in general, a judicial notice is taken only of facts that can reasonably there's no dispute of, and in this situation there's clearly a dispute as to the facts of which the affidavits he cited and gave to the defense at the end of the hearing. There's clearly a dispute, and we disputed that in the hearing concerning the certification of the blood test kit, the blood tubes, the amount of sodium fluoride in the specimen, etc. And I can go into detail of that, but I...
But what is there anything in the record that indicates what evidence you would have presented had you had an opportunity for another hearing, or if you had you received those documents earlier?
The only evidence of the record is my mention of a hearing that I had had and was proceeding with on the second day in Denver County Court. We had already had several hours of motions hearings at that time. There was a considerable amount of evidence.
The same case? Or, the case that's in the Denver District Court, you mean that?
I mentioned the case that it was in Denver County Court, and that is in the record, that I had already had several hours of hearing on the same issue.
With a different respondent?
Different.
Driver license.
Correct, yes. And again, that is in a criminal context, and the standard of is beyond a reasonable doubt, which is different than this one, clearly, but that there is a mention in the record that there is a considerable amount of information that could be presented at a hearing, yes. Now, the we presented a certificate from the manufacturer of the tubes and the manufacturer of the test kit, and those are in the record, and clearly the range of values means that without an actual test, you cannot determine whether the specimen complies with the Department of Health regulations as to the sodium fluoride. So there is clearly a dispute on the issue. And without evidence and without the ability to cross-examine the experts who provided the affidavits, the defendant was hampered in his ability to contravene that information that the court took notice of. Additionally, as the subsection 8 hearing requires that the Department of Motor Vehicles executive director specify what is contained in an affidavit and may specify other documents as relevant. The executive director has not done so, and the issue then becomes whether all the documents provided are relevant and what are considered relevant documents and what aren't. It's our contention that without a specific direction as to what is considered relevant, that anything other than the affidavit should not be considered.
Is your position that the test results are not showing the licensee's blood alcohol content is not relevant?
If it were specified by the executive director as a relevant document, yes, I would say it would be.
I'm asking, do you think it's a relevant document? Because you said it was not a relevant document a moment ago.
I think it has not been designated as a relevant document. If it were, it certainly would be.
Okay.
Is that?
Yes.
Is there any case that you're aware of that in Colorado that supports your interpretation of the statute?
Not to my knowledge, no. However, I don't believe that particular issue has ever been considered.
At all or considered in a published opinion?
Considered a published opinion, which is only what's available to me. I don't have the resources to go back through unpublished opinions that are not available. And basically, it is our contention that due to the documents that were not provided and the fact that the hearing officer considered documents that were not designated as relevant documents, the hearing conclusion was improper. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes and 10 seconds.
You may.
Thank you.
Ms. Smith?
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I am Assistant Attorney General Catherine Smith, representing the appellee of the Colorado Department of Revenue Division of Motor Vehicles. My view of this case is far simpler than the driver's view of this case. Upon receipt of reliable and probative evidence that a person has been driving a motor vehicle with blood alcohol levels in excess of the statutory limit of 0.08, the DMV is statutorily required to revoke a driver's license. Here, a driver was found passed out behind the wheel of a vehicle, parked in front of a bar, the engine was running in the car, the keys were in the ignition, and music was blaring from the open door. Driver's eyes were bloodshot and glassy, his speech was slurred and offensive, he was unable to stand and balance long enough to perform the roadside tests, and was unable to walk from the police car into the police department without assistance. He exhibited clear signs of severe intoxication. He elected a blood test. The CDPHE analyzed his blood sample and determined that his blood level was 0.246, more than 3 times the legal limit. The CDPHE reported the laboratory test results in a form that contains boxes. One shows the blood test result, and the other box explains that the detection limit is 0.1 grams per 100 milliliters of blood. this report conforms to the statutory definition of blood alcohol content, and which requires measurement of the blood alcohol in grams of alcohol per 100 milliliters of blood. The revocation of driver's license is supported by ample evidence the driver was operating a motor vehicle while intoxicated. He seeks to overturn the revocation on two grounds, lack of jurisdiction and lack of evidence. With regard to lack of jurisdiction, drivers is arguing that the DMV lacked jurisdiction. Driver's counsel raised an argument before the court just now that was not raised at the hearing, was not raised at the district court, is not preserved for appeal. I would point the court, and unfortunately I can't find the exact statutory site, but the driver's license statute specifically state that the APA applies only to the extent that it is consistent with the driver's license statutes. Nothing in the plain language of the driver's license statute supports driver's contention that there is a requirement that there be a specific notation by an identified individual. The driver's license statutes expressly confer authority upon the DMV to make revocation determinations upon receipt of a law enforcement officer's express consent affidavit, relevant supporting documents submitted to the department, including the blood test results. Yes, Your Honor?
How do we deal with this issue of the question of, I believe it's 42.2.2165A, talks about the executive director specifically specifying, quote, relevant documents, and there apparently not being any such specification, at least there's no authority called to our attention yet of any such specification by the executive director.
I don't read the statutory sections that govern the hearings in quite the same way that you're suggesting. 42.1.26.6 directs the DMV upon the receipt of the affidavit of the law enforcement officer and the relevant documents to determine whether the person's license should be revoked under subsection 3. The language in subsection 5 is permissive. It says that the executive director shall specify the form of the affidavit, and that's the express consent affidavit that is in the record, I think, at page 38. And then it goes on to say may specify any additional documents or copies of documents needed by the department. But it doesn't require the DMV to have extensive knowledge about the police officer's records and to enumerate all the documents that are required. And then when you get to 42.1.26.8, I believe there's a requirement that the hearing officer actually 42.2.1.26.8C, the department shall consider all relevant evidence at the hearing, including no law enforcement officer was actually subpoenaed, so there was no testimony. The statute specifies that they shall consider the reports of the law enforcement officer. So I think as you read this as a whole, it's intended that the DMV would consider these reports and that there isn't a need for the kind of specific detail that the driver is arguing for.
As I understand, let me see if I can put in layman's terms what I think your argument is that what you're saying is the executive director can, if it wants to, specify other documents other than the affidavit, which have to be used.
Correct.
But if the executive director doesn't do that, it doesn't mean that the department can't look at other relevant documents in making the initial determination of a revocation. Is that what you're saying?
It is, and you've said it far better than I did. Thank you.
Let me just ask, though, have you still got subsection 6 in front of you there, section 42.2.216?
I do.
You referred to the second sentence, but the first sentence says, upon receipt of an affidavit of a law enforcement officer in the relevant documents required by paragraph A of subsection 5 of this section, the department shall determine whether the person's license should be revoked. And then it says, the determination shall be based upon the information contained in the affidavit in the relevant documents. Isn't that referring back to the documents required by paragraph A of subsection 5, and therefore does that depend upon the executive director having specified such documents?
I still read it the way that Judge Loeb articulated it, which is that there is an express requirement that the DMV provide the contents of the affidavit and that they consider that affidavit. There's statutory authority for them to require documents in addition to the express consent affidavit if the DMV were to determine that that was necessary in order to uphold revocations and to meet all the elements. They have this grant of authority that would allow them to require some other kind of documentation, but if they find the documentation from the police department sufficient, they're not required to specify anything in addition.
Let me ask you, would it, if all the, if it were the case that all that could be considered for this initial determination is the affidavit submitted by the arresting policeman, would that be sufficient to justify, is there sufficient information there?
Yes, the express consent affidavit of Sergeant Vanderveen contains the date, time, and place that driver was contacted, the reason for the contact, which is stated as driver was found passed out behind the wheel of the vehicle while the vehicle was running, that on contact, driver's breath had an odor of alcohol, his eyes were bloodshot and glassy, his speech was slurred and offensive, and his balance unsteady. The affidavit states that driver was unable to complete voluntary roadside maneuvers satisfactorily as compared to a sober person, that driver chose a blood test, and that his BAC was 0.08 or more. So all of the elements of a driver's license revocation are met there, and basically the elements are that the driver was operating a motor vehicle, was asked by police officer with probable cause to believe that he was operating a motor vehicle to take a chemical test, and that chemical test shows that his blood alcohol level exceeds the legal limit.
Maybe Judge Miller was, why do we resolve this issue? Documents of the,
you don't. I agree that you could uphold the revocation simply on the express consent affidavit of Sergeant Vanderveen. I'd like to address a little bit the documents related to sodium fluoride levels, and just to kind of restate the context in which this arose. This arose when driver had introduced two exhibits into the record, which are actually certificates of compliance that show that the blood test that was used, the blood test kit that was used to draw driver's blood actually complies with the CDPHE regulation. So they actually support the DMV's position that there's substantial compliance. And during the hearing, there was discussion back and forth between counsel for the driver and the hearing officer. And in an attempt to address driver's concerns, my understanding of what happened is that the DMV hearing officer took two affidavits that are on the wall of the hearing room down and used them in the hearing. When he did that, he expressly said, I'm not taking judicial notice. What he said is, I'm using my authority under the driving statutes to consider affidavits from persons other than the respondent. And the reason he wanted to use those affidavits is simply to show that if there is proper refrigeration, sodium fluoride is not necessary to preserve a sample, and that it, at the level of 0.36 sodium fluoride, which is roughly one-third the level the CDPHE regulation requires, that a sample is appropriately preserved. The court doesn't need, again, the court actually doesn't need to reach this issue with regard to admissibility because Driver did not put on any evidence regarding the actual level of sodium fluoride, the volume of blood drawn. There's just merely speculation that there was noncompliance, which is insufficient. Under Siddle and Thomas, substantial but not strict compliance with the CDPHE regulation is required, and any deficiency related to compliance goes to the weight of the evidence, not its admissibility. Similarly, in criminal DUI matters, by statute, only substantial compliance with CDPHE regulations is required. Before I end, I'd like to just clean up one loose end. Driver's reply brief asks for attorney's fees, and the grounds for that are that the answer brief I submitted paraphrases a statement by a DMV hearing officer, and I would just like the court to know that I cited to the hearing transcript record when I cited that, and that if the court sees any merit to this argument, I renew my request to brief this issue.
I don't have any information.
Yes, my brief doesn't mention the name of the executive director.
No record on that.
Pardon?
Is there a record on that before?
There's no record about that one way or the other. In attempting to respond to driver's questions, the hearing officer said, I found the answer to your question. Since 1983, the hearing officers have been following the guidance of Director Jorgensen. And that's the sole statement. The proper remedy, if you don't want to admit that fact into the record, would be to ignore it. For all the following reasons, I ask that you affirm the revocation of driver's license. Affirm the revocation of his license.
Thank you, counsel. Smith?
I'm Ms. Johnson.
Johnson, excuse me. We have a Johnson and a Smith and a Judge Miller. It's a little...
I was going to say Smith and Johnson. I'm not quite, but... Your Honor, we disagree that the express consent affidavit is sufficient. The marked box says, because you submitted testing that disclosed an accident, alcohol concentration of 0.08 or more, or 0.02 or more if you're under the age, etc. It does not specify the exact grounds, nor does it specify an exact blood alcohol concentration. So there is nothing on the affidavit that allows the defendant, Mr. Owens, to try to contravene it.
But it does say that it's more than 0.08, correct?
Or more than 0.02, yes, that is correct. It does, the box is marked, yes.
Statutory requirement.
Correct.
Okay.
With regard to the sodium fluoride, we are not disputing whether there is substantial compliance. The issue is more whether the substantial compliance is sufficient. We were not given the information ahead of time, and certainly the defendant is not required to do a sodium fluoride test and provide it. The burden of proof is on the hearing, the law enforcement, the hearing officer, not on the defendant to prove that he is guilty or not. And there's no evidence one way or the other with regard to the volume of blood drawn, et cetera. The issue is whether there was the substantial compliance allegedly was sufficient, and we maintain that it was not, and that the affidavits that the hearing officer considered, which to me basically means he took notice of, consideration and notice are basically the same thing. It's a matter of semantics. We feel that was inappropriate to do so without giving prior notice to the defendant, allowing us to bring in, giving us time to bring in witnesses. For the foregoing, we would ask that you determine that the revocation.
Can I ask just one last question?
Sure.
The respondent the driver asked for you, asked for any additional time beyond the 11 days that have been allotted? You said there wasn't time for you to get this all done in 11 days.
Did not. Statutorily, you can't use, not possible to do so. There is no provision for continuances past the appropriate 60 days unless there is a the officer or another witness who has been subpoenaed is unavailable for an appropriate reason. That's the only provision that I know of that would allow such a continuance out past the 60 days.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to both counsel for your arguments. The case is submitted and a decision will be forthcoming in due course.